In 1786, Nicholas Dalyrac wrote an opera called Nina. It's the story about a young woman whose lover was killed in a duel. Nina was so traumatized that she buried the memory. It was as if it never happened. Every day she would return to the train station to await her lover's return, a return that would never be. If only Nina could know the truth.
Is this real?
No, but it once was.
A memory.
Very good.
How?
Never mind how.
Let me out. I want out!
I'm sorry, Levin. You'll have to find your own way out. Leave your train station. Stop waiting. Focus. Listen. Remember.
I don't understand! I don't understand!
Stranger danger, talking stranger things. Together, forever, we're loving Stranger Things. It's Stranger Things forever. Rewatching season 4 from the start to the finish. It's Stranger Things forever. Every podcast we do will cover just 10 minutes. Stranger danger everywhere. I hope that you people still care. It's time for me to do it. Let's get to it. Come on, everyone.
Greetings, stranger friends, and welcome back to Stranger Things Forever, rewatching season 4 from the start to the finish. Folks, it's Wednesday, October 15th, and as of today, we are down to 42 days. I think I'm at the point now where if I did an episode every single day, I am not sure I would catch up. But guess what? I'm going to catch up. I'm going to complete this project one way or another. Now, as I've told you, I am traveling come Saturday. Saturday, Massachusetts to Virginia. Sunday, Virginia to South Carolina. And then Monday, South Carolina to Florida. Once I'm in Florida, it is possible that I might have time to do a show. I doubt it. So I might try to, I don't know. I don't know if I could bank a couple to put out while I'm traveling next week. But I do know that Monday I'll be in Florida. Tuesday, I'll be in Florida, and Wednesday, I'm flying home to Massachusetts. I have Thursday off. I have Friday off. And you know who doesn't have Thursday and Friday off? My wife, which means that I'll be home with nothing to do but talk Stranger Things to the stranger friends like you. So if I can't get episodes out while I'm traveling, I'm going to record I'm going to record my ass off to get as many as I can done. But that's next week. We're still here now. I did put out an episode yesterday where I thanked all the, well, the top 10 countries where all the stranger friends are listening. And I did get a couple responses, which I thought was fun. I got a message from Enrico Pessoa. Am I saying that right? I want to say it like Enrico Pessoa, but I feel like that might be culturally insensitive, so I'll just say it like this. Enrico Pessoa. There, that's better, right? And he did say, he said, you did get the obrigado right. And it's bad because I want to say obrigado, Mr. Roboto, and that's two different languages. And, well, I guess one of the languages is English because it's not even really Japanese. But I got it right. Yes, my Portuguese ancestors have blessed me with getting, at least pronouncing a word right when I looked it up on Google Docs. And then I got a message from Jeremy. Now, I don't know if he spelled it wrong and it's Jeremy or if his name is Jeremy. Either way, I'm gonna say it how it's spelled, and that's Jeremy. It says, "Hi, Mike. I'm from the Netherlands." So maybe Jeremy is a Netherlands name, and I love your podcast. Awesome. Thank you. By the way, here in the Netherlands, we speak Dutch. I feel like I should have known that. And I'm a little embarrassed for, didn't I say yesterday, I don't know what they speak, Netherlands? I don't remember. I don't even remember. It was yesterday and I don't remember. But Dutch, of course, which, you know, you say, wait a minute, they speak Dutch in the Netherlands? Well, we speak English in America. So, I mean, it doesn't matter what the name of the language is, and they speak Portuguese in Brazil. So it is whatever language they speak is what they speak, and it's Dutch. And I want to say to you, Jeremy, bedank voor je reactie. Okay, I typed in thank you for your comment on Google Translate from English to Dutch. And if I were just to read this, I would say bedankt voor je reactie. But I think I might have pronounced it sort of close. So anyway, thank you so much for your comment. And you know, if you listen on Spotify, you can leave comments on any episode. But if you don't listen on Spotify, you could always leave a review on Apple. That'd be sweet. And if you did want to reach out to me, you can email strangerdanger@fans.experts.com. You can just go to fans.experts.com or strangerdangerpodcast.com and you can leave a voicemail. We have a button on every single episode to leave a voicemail. So you can do that too. And really, if you leave a voicemail, 99.9% of the time, I'm going to play it on the show. Now, you'd think that would be me like teasing for a voicemail that came through. It isn't one. So I'm not begging for one. But if you want to send one, you know, you can do it. And I got a third comment on yesterday's episode. This is from Fizza, just thanking me for mentioning her yesterday. And I'll just say, you're very welcome. Now, the only other thing I wanted to talk about before going into the next 10 minutes of the Nina Project is a big Variety article came out today that is titled "Saying Goodbye to Stranger Things, The Duffer Brothers Tell All on Season 5 Secrets, The Tearful Finale, and Leaving Netflix for Paramount." I am going to put a link to this article in the show notes. I'm almost afraid to read it, but it looks like, I don't know if Variety still pulls out a paper magazine, but they have a nice photo shoot and it looks like they're on the cover of whatever this is. It might just be a photo for the article, but it just kind of, it's a pretty lengthy article and I do want to read it, but I don't want to read it. I'm not going to read it to you guys. And I don't want to see anything. I know the tell-all isn't going to say anything, but I almost don't want to, you know, like I was watching, I like the show Peacemaker, and I listened to the podcast with James Gunn, and he's like, well, this episode's great, but I can't wait for the end of the sixth episode. And that's not a teaser for anything, except to me, it's kind of a spoiler, except it is, because now I'm like, well, something's going to happen here, waiting for it, waiting for it. Oh, there it is. Where I don't want to know anything. I want to know as little as possible besides, of course, watching the trailers. So I'm going to put a link to this article in the show notes. You can definitely check it out. I did see some other articles. You know, it's funny. You do an article for some source, and then all these other resources, all these other places, outlets, glom onto that article and post their own article saying, hey, they did an interview where they talked about this. And it's like, but instead of clicking that one, just click ours. And I hate that, but that is a lot of what the internet is. But I did see one article where they talked about how the Duffers looked at a lot of series finales of other shows. So I am going to read one paragraph from this article, the original Variety article. It says, the Duffers studied series finales that they felt really worked, such as the final installments of Six Feet Under, Friday Night Lights, and even The Sopranos, whose cut to black was controversial at the time but is now widely respected. Ross Duffer says the best ones were very true to themselves. The shows that are trying to be super clever, I think that's where it can go wrong really quickly. That's all I'm going to read. I don't want to read anymore, but I like the fact that they put a lot of thought of not only ending the show, how to end it, but to make sure that the ending is true to what Stranger Things is. And I think Stranger Things has always been a show that takes big swings for big moments, and like it's nothing but epic. There are small moments, there are quiet moments, there are really sweet moments, but at the heart, it's seeing these characters who we love because of the quiet moments go up against immeasurable evil and triumph in epic proportions. So I hope, I pray, and you know what? I expect and I believe that we're going to get that with the finale on the final day of 2025, which, again, I have to say, I have 2 weeks of work off. Like, it's not vacation where I have to, I come back and all this vacation's waiting for me. My work is completely closed for 2 weeks, which means when I get back, everyone gets back at the same time. So it's like, we just pick up where we left off. There's nothing like waiting for me. So that means those 2 weeks, a full real vacation in Massachusetts weather. So it's not like you want to travel or do too much. My wife and I are going away in February, you know, down to visit her mother in Naples, Florida. So it's like, and I told her, I go, that time I'm going to be podcasting my butt off, because those 2 weeks between Christmas, or the week between Christmas and New Year's, but my 2 week vacation is dedicated to getting these episodes out to you, the stranger friends of the entire world. All right, that's it. No more funny business. Let's get down to the next 10 minutes of The Nina Project. So it picks up right at the tail end of Dustin and Steve as they're making their way upstairs. That was from the end of the last 10 minutes. So we see the tail end of that. It's funny, we're kind of bookended with those two characters. But our block really kind of begins as we jump over to the Bering Strait as a plane is flying over with Joyce, Murray, and Yuri. Joyce and Murray are kind of sitting there feeling hopeless. Murray's asking to go to the bathroom. I don't know where he would on this plane, but Yuri's just flying the plane with eating his peanut butter, and Joyce realizes he cannot hear them at all. So she's like, oh, he can't hear us at all, can he? So she knocks over some jars of peanut butter. Thankfully, they're made of glass, and her plan is to use the shard of the peanut butter to cut themselves free. And then Murray can, you know, use his black belt skills to take out Yuri. You know, get his gun and force him to fly the plane back. It's very simple stuff. You know, as far as Joyce is concerned, she's like, isn't black belt the highest level? And he's like, well, he confesses he's never actually fought in a real-world scenario, but he has sparred with the other students in his class. But most of the kids, you know, most of them are no younger than 13. I mean, Jeremiah, he's 16, and, you know, he's almost 16. And Murray beat him, and he's like, wait a second. I did beat him. And he realizes, surely Yuri is not as trained as Jeremiah. And what started out as a punchline actually turns into Murray feeling confident for himself. And he's like, he thanks Joyce for talking him through this. But you can see the look on her face. She's not feeling as confident. Then we jump over to really the most important part of this 10 minutes. And that's over in Nevada at the Nina Project in the missile silo. We're in Eleven's mind still. And we're seeing her run from trying to escape the Rainbow Room. She's running from, you know, running down the hall. But every door she opens brings her right back to it. You can see the look on her face. She feels hopeless. She feels trapped. She feels stuck. And the lights flicker and she's back in the room again. And we see that blonde orderly, you know, who I'm sure, you know, he just seems like a nice, sweet boy and he's not really that important to the overall story, but he's there. And he repeats that line about, oh, you know, look who's finally, you know, decided to join us. Eleven sees a security camera up in the corner of the room. She goes right up to it and she starts screaming, you know, stop it, let me out. And nothing happens. And so she kind of steps down and walks over to this giant mirror. And when she looks at it, she sees herself, but she sees the small child version of herself that actually lived in the lab. So she realizes whatever's happening, it's not real. All of a sudden, Brenner can be heard over the loudspeaker. Now it's actually Brenner outside in, you know, outside of the Nina tank, talking to the actual Eleven inside the you know, this memory, this vision, and he talks about an opera. He says in 1786, Nicholas de Layrac, I may have said that wrong, he wrote an opera called Nina. It's the clip I played at the beginning, the story about a young woman whose lover was killed in a duel, but she was so traumatized that she buried the memory, and as if it never would return. He's, you know, every day she would go to the train station, await her lover's return, a return that would never happen. If only Nina could know the truth. So they name the tank after the opera of this girl who suppressed her memories. So I guess that's their way of saying you. And we, you know, they haven't like gone to the full point yet, but Eleven has, she didn't lose her powers. She repressed her powers. Did you say I said powers? I'm telling you, Boston comes through. She repressed her powers. And, this is kind of her, they're trying to use this as the way to get them back. You know, Eleven says, this isn't real. And Brenner says, no, but it once was. And she realizes it's a memory. And she says, I want out. He says, I'm sorry, Eleven, you'll have to find your own way out. He doesn't really have a good bedside manner as far as a doctor's concerned. And then the memory repeats itself. And Brenner tells her, you have to focus, listen, remember. And she seems to kind of remember what happens in that conversation, and she reenacts it. Like, she answers him, am I going to get in trouble? He's like, no, you know, training starts soon. And he goes, you're going to do great. I just know it. The Brenner in the memory comes in. He's like, good morning, children. Good morning, Papa, which, again, always creeps me out. Eleven gets right in line, like she knows, she remembers she's supposed to, and like she remembers she once did. And then they follow Papa out of the room and down a hall someplace for some training. We now see Brenner outside again, monitoring the situation as Owens comes in and asks about her. He's like, Owens is like, you know, how's she doing? Brenner says, she's doing good. She's swimming now. And he says, good, because I just got off the phone with Stinson and we don't have much time. And as I mentioned, Stinson is the woman who works for Owens, who was in the Munson trailer just 10 minutes ago. And Brenner's like, well, then she'll just have to swim faster. Like, just everything he says is like so ominous sounding. Now, we then go inside the tank. We see inside it. We see all these videos playing around Eleven. And like, I would assume these are old security footage, like old security footage of the actual lab to playing to help her remember these situations, right? Because everything was recorded. It's not like one part of me is thinking, wait, are they visualizing her thoughts like Mike TV and Willy Wonka? I don't think so. I think, isn't that what they did? Or did they just put him in the TV? I don't remember. Anyway, I think these are just there to prompt her. And then we see Eleven in the tank. Floating in the water. She's got this sort of white suit on and a swim cap with all kinds of doodads hooked up to it. And as the camera pushes in, we see her eyes are closed, but they are moving all over the place, you know, because she's dreaming. Well, dreaming, whatever it is. She's living out these memories in her head. And we leave her and we jump over to the crew who are trying to find her, trying to save her. The Surfer Boy Pizza Boys in the desert. The van is roaring down the street, and the boys yell at Argyle, slow down, as they come across a payphone. I remember being at the Methuen Mall as a kid and needing a ride home and having to find a payphone. And I think I had to borrow a quarter from our neighbor, who was also the chief of police, so that we could call my dad to drive us home. Mind you, I lived less than a mile from the friggin' mall. I mean, I've walked there, you know, in my adult years. I live further from the mall now, I think, and I still walk there. But I could have just walked home. I mean, I could have got jumped walking home, but as a young kid, you don't think you're going to walk home, you know, and you're 13 years old, but I could have. Anyway, the payphone. So they reach the payphone and they call the number, the same number I called the other day, 202-968-6161. They connect to what people my age remember how it sounded to connect to the internet, back to the old days of dial-up internet. I'm gonna take a moment to, you don't realize how connected you are now. You pick up your phone, you're connected to the internet. You pick up your laptop, your TV, everything's kind of connected to the internet. Where back when my family first started getting online, I remember my uncle having a thing called Prodigy. You would pay a monthly service to Prodigy and you would call the phone number to Prodigy, connect to the Prodigy servers. And that's how you would check, you know, scores and stocks and news, and you could chat with people. And it was very early, but it was very cool because I'm like, these people are all over the country, all over the world. This is crazy. And it was all text-based, you know, with pictures, I think, too. Then that turned into, like, America Online, AOL, that became the big thing. But the same thing where you would call a number and connect to the internet. And I remember using, I think the company was called Netway. You would call their number. They were the internet service provider before cable companies took over everything. So I would call this number, connect to it, Netway, because they had the good 56K modem, and then I could browse the internet. But I remember my uncle, same uncle who had Prodigy, who loves computers and stuff, he gave me a list of phone numbers for different databases, like bulletin boards. So instead of like connecting to your internet service provider, like, you know, say, now would be Fios or Xfinity, or your phone, you would dial a specific number to see a specific thing. And I would do that. Like, I would go through the number. You type it into your computer. You make sure your phone is off the hook. No, your phone would sit there. And I have to do it at night because we had one phone line. And you'd have all these random phone numbers to call. And I accidentally called someone's house. So one of these numbers was not a bulletin board. It was someone's house. And the guy was like, hello? Who is this? I was like, oh, sorry. I thought I was calling a computer. No, I think I hung up. And the guy called me back in my parents' house. You know, the house I grew up in. The phone number's ringing. I grab it off the hook. I'm like, I'm sorry. I thought I was calling a computer. I apologize. And I hang up. I was so frightened. But anyway, that's the sound of a modem. So some people may be like, oh, wow, that's how internet used to sound. And to me, it's just like brings back so many memories. And you think the boys would be like, what the hell is this noise? Like, they don't know the internet. The internet is such, it's still in its infancy back then. Again, I wasn't on it till almost like, I think 1995 is when I was finally online. But because these kids are pop culture nerds, the sound reminds them of War Games, which of course is where Ferris Bueller himself, Matthew Broderick, connected to computers to think he was playing a game, but almost start an actual war. And that's when Will realizes they're not calling a phone, they're calling a computer. And Mike realizes, well, there's only one person they know who can help them. Only one computer hacker they know at all. And she's in Salt Lake City. And Jonathan says, you can't be serious. Mike says, I know it's insane, but Susie saved the world last year. Maybe she can do it again. Boom. Awesome. You see that Susie's involved. Now you see they have a plan. They have to drive all the way to freaking Utah, but they think they can get there by morning. So we have a road trip. They have a destination. They have a plan now, and that's to get to Susie. We jump back to Hawkins, where we stay for the rest of these 10 minutes. And we see Eddie's just futzing around outside or in Reefer Rick's boathouse, just kind of, you know, waiting, anticipating. You know, he has nothing to do except sit there and try to be safe and try not to get discovered. And of course, that's when the Prick Squad arrives. Eddie hears a car. He looks out. He's like, oh, snap. And they didn't even bother getting changed out of their suits, which makes them kind of look like a young, douchey version of Reservoir Dogs. It's Jason, Patrick, and the other guy. Again, I don't remember. He's very forgetful. I want to say Kevin, maybe? I don't know. But they have a bat, a wrench, and a tire iron. And I'm thinking, oh, they're here to murder Eddie. And the guys just, the doors open. They just walk right in. They let themselves in. You know, while Eddie is freaking out outside the boathouse. They're inside the house. And Jason sees the SpaghettiO pan. And he's like, it's him. Now, I don't know. It'd be funny if he tested the spaghetti and he licked it like, this is Eddie's spaghetti. SpaghettiOs. But he just kind of makes the assumption that he's there and they found the place. And Eddie, you know, is freaking the frig out. Yeah, I'm sorry for the language, but he is desperately calling for anybody to answer him on the walkie-talkie. He's like, Dustin, you know, it's a code red basically, but Dustin's walkie, you know, we saw him drop his bag on the floor at the Creel House while the walkie's in it, and they're all upstairs. So there's nobody answering him, and we jump back to Dustin and Steve as they're exploring in the house, and that's it. I told you, we got 2 seconds, or 1 second of Dustin and Steve at the beginning, 1 second of Dustin and Steve at the end, but in the middle, we discovered what the Nina Project is. It is 11 trying to use her memories to help get her powers that are repressed, using these old realizations, these old experiences, to try to prompt something to bring her powers back. And it's funny that Brenner is somehow focusing the memories to these moments because he knows these are the moments that matter. These are the moments that changed 11 forever. And while 11 may have suppressed them, Brenner knows that, you know, he can't just help her. He can't just tell her. She's got to figure it out on her own. Meanwhile, the boys are in the desert and they're trying to rescue 11. The only thing they have is that phone number, but that leads them to a computer. So now they're going all the way to Utah to find Susie, who hopefully can help them figure out what the hell this connection is and what it can do for them, how they can use it, how it can help in whatever way. We also have Murray deciding he is going to use his karate to take out Yuri. And of course, those effing basketball a-holes, they're closing in on Eddie Munson as this 10 minutes comes to an end. So that's it. What happens next? You'll have to wait until next time. But I want to give a shout out again to all the comments that I got from Eriko, Jeremy, and Fizza. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being wonderful stranger friends. And everyone else, thank you so much for listening, for subscribing, for following along, for supporting the show all these years. I truly, truly appreciate it. And that's it. I think I'm done. But I will be back soon to talk more Nina Project. But until then, thank you so much for listening and subscribing. You can find me on all the socials at Geek Mentality, except TikTok, which is Geek Mentality Mike. The Facebook page is Fans.Experts. The YouTube channel is Fans.Experts. All my podcasts can be found at Fans.Experts.com. And of course, everything Stranger Danger can be found directly at StrangerDangerPodcast.com. So once again, thank you. Once again, obrigado. And remember that people like you and people like me and people like Ariko, and people like Fizza, and people like Jeremy all over the world who help keep Stranger Things alive for, say it with me, ever!
Fans, not experts.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.